Okay, welcome back, everybody. We're now on page 256, petitions still being actioned. There are no petitions still being actioned. Item 14, petitions received in the last period. We received a petition regarding curbside collection in Leslie Vale. There is a recommendation on page 256, and I'm looking for a mover in Councillor Fox and a seconder in Councillor Midgley. Councillor Fox.
It's my understanding that there is no discussion on petitions, just a matter of accepting them. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. In that case, I'll put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
And against? Motion is carried unanimously. Page 256, officers' reports to council. We're considering the 2025-26 capital works budget review. There is a recommendation on page 259. I'm looking for a mover in Councillor Antoli and a seconder in Councillor Bain. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. So for anyone who's following along, good on you, you're a brave soul. This is a budget neutral housekeeping item. There's no new spending is being requested, no additional funds are being allocated, and what we're doing is moving savings around from some projects to cover increased costs on other projects, with the net financial impact being zero, as I understand it. In short, the size of the capital program remains exactly the same. Some key highlights is that there'll be no increase to the total capital budget. Savings from completed or underrunning projects are relocated responsibly. Some projects require modest increase to reflect real-world construction conditions. A small number of the projects are deferred for better design certainty. One new stormwater project responds to urgent erosion and flooding, and the overall program remains deliverable with a forecast completion rate of around 90%, which is, in my view, pretty high for local government. So I'd like to commend the engineering team and our new Director of Engineering, because I think he's delivered a process here that's transparent, it's disciplined, and it's clearly focused on community benefit. And I know the community appreciates that, because engineering and capital management is half of what we do. Savings have been identified early, they've been explained openly, and the team has redeployed to priority works, while overruns have been absorbed internally, an example of that being the Summerlees Road overpass. And I think that's a big win that we were able to actually absorb that internally, given that project. And I do commend bringing forward the Kingston Beach foreshore works to avoid, I believe, what we would call duplicated costs. That's a strong example of good operational judgment. And I like the professionalism this is showing. And I do want to commend our CFO and our CEO for keeping a watchful eye on the costs, which could so easily blow out in this part of what we do. And I'm really pleased to move this recommendation for everyone's input and consideration.
Thank you, Councillor Antoli. Further contributions, Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. My question is around the deferred projects, specifically the gross pollutant trap for the wetlands. So it appears here that there's $500,000. The installation of this new gross pollutant trap at the wetlands has been deferred to determine viability of a more cost-effective solution. Please may I have an update on that, specifically because I remember, if my memory serves me, a few years ago getting a workshop into stormwater management at the wetlands, and the idea I thought was to introduce a new best practice, new technology, some innovative solution, and I'm just wanting to know what's happening there and are we moving to something that's more remedial rather than fancier?
Mr. Mackey.
Yeah, thank you. Good question. Myself and the engineering staff went down and looked at the situation in the wetlands. The scenario is that you've got a weir system set up there now, which predominantly during normal water flows stops any of the gross pollutants actually reporting down towards the river. You've also got a mesh graded system across the inlet leading into the wetlands, so none of the trash or larger objects can actually move into the wetland area. So it's really a choice for us whether we, whether we choose to clean out a gross pollutant trap on a frequent basis, or we choose to clean out the section before the weir. We think there's a more elegant design to be put in place for the overflow channel with some trash baskets. So when we get a large rain event and if we do get any trash reporting over the weir, we can actually capture those, and it's easy for our staff to access them and clean them out routinely. When we reassess the options with that, we'll obviously be involving the Environment Department and doing a thorough risk assessment to ensure whatever solution we put in place is valid and compliant.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Am I correct in thinking that this solution in the wetlands will also have an impact on dealing with stormwater runoff from Kingston Park, that it's one holistic system that is integrated, or are these, or is the gross pollutant trap in the wetlands has nothing to do with stormwater runoff through Kingston Park?
To the best of my knowledge, I believe that's two separate issues.
That's all. Just to say in conclusion that I think this is, I think it is a transparent way of dealing with the overs and unders. It's always comforting to see where the money has been. A project goes ahead and you always have a contingency amount of money there, and if you don't spend all of it, then that money can then get reallocated to other projects. So it's really good for the community, I think, to be able to see how those overs and unders work. I also think that just in terms of framing of the discussion, when we do infrastructure repair and maintenance, we're refreshing and renewing existing infrastructure, and also every now and again there's call for new infrastructure to go in. That's a net benefit for the community. That's always a good thing, and we wouldn't be doing our jobs if we let the infrastructure that we have degrade or fall into disrepair. So these investments, and I use that word deliberately, that it really is an investment rather than a cost, what we're doing is investing in the community and trying to meet community expectations. So I think that we shouldn't always think of this in terms of trying to get the cost, so to speak, as far down as possible. Because if you think about in your own personal life, if you've got a car and you don't invest in maintaining that car, it's going to end up costing you a lot more in the long run, because you allow things to fall into disrepair and then the cost of repairing them becomes more substantial. So prudent investment in a timely way across our municipality is a good thing, and that's the best way to manage our infrastructure. But I think the way that this report has been presented is good, and I appreciate the work that's gone into it from all the staff. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Further contributions, Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Yes, it's pleasing to see. I think there's over $600,000 of savings across those seven projects mentioned, which have been reallocated elsewhere, so that's great. Just a question around the Browns Road project, that second stage. That's one that's been on the cards for quite a while now. So with this extra cash injection, are we expecting that to be wrapped up this financial year before 30th of June, do we think?
Very good question. We're currently working through the alternate traffic management plan with the Department of State Growth. We're at the point now where we're going to be submitting the traffic management plan and seeking to get a permit. As far as the additional costs go, it's regarding that traffic management. We need an on-ramp back onto the southern outlet, and we need to get a new revised tender price. So this is, a forecast of what we expect the cost to be. We won't truly know what that cost is until we get that revised tender process, but our objective is to start this work somewhere towards the end of February into early March.
Councillor Bain. Further contributions? No, in that case, Councillor Antoli, would you like to sum up? No. I'll put the motion then. It's printed up there on the screen. Moved by Councillor Antoli, seconded by Councillor Bain. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
And against. Motion is carried unanimously. Page 264, petition, installation of footpaths and upgrades on Cleburne Street, Kingston. There's a recommendation on page 265. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Move Councillor Midgley, seconded Councillor Bain. Councillor Midgley.
Acting Mayor, the purpose of this report is to respond to a petition regarding the installation of a sealed footpath and the reseal and repair of curb and gutter on Claiborne Street in Kingston. So the 24 to the junction of Barranoa Road. There were 56 signatories regarding this, and the officers are going to do an inspection and implement maintenance works, and then advise the people who put in the petition. And then any capital proposals in regards to what the officers find out will be, I guess, considered in budget deliberations in the five-year capital works plan. I just have a question in regards to that. Thanks for the information and the petitioners as well, because we know that having, active transport links and livability and walkability links are really important. It's a high-traffic area. And people who live there know their local area and know the benefits of having better upgrades in that area as well. So I thank them for putting forward the petition. In regards to when the council staff do the review of the conditions of this, noting that we will advise the petitioners, how will we keep them sort of updated in regards to where that's going and what it looks going forward?
Mr. Mackey.
Thank you for the question. We're in the process currently of developing our capital program for next year and then the subsequent years beyond that. As part of that development process, we'll go back to the petitioner and let them know where in the capital program we look to execute that work. We think it's reasonably likely it will be certainly within the five-year capital program, given that there's road reseal works that need to be completed, and we're looking at the opportunity to join those works up.
Councillor Mitchley.
Just one further question. We do, I think we've done like a footpath audit across Kingborough. So this will, I guess, form, rather than if people put in petitions for all sorts of areas, which you know there's a lot of community needs and upgrades, how do we kind of assess that among the whole kind of project of works?
Mr. Mackey.
Yeah. thank you. This year we're actually introducing a prioritisation of our capital works so we can actually assess all programs across all asset classes to determine what investments we should be making in the near term. So that'll be in development and that's basically where we're heading with that.
Councillor Midgley. Any further contributions, Councillor Antoli?
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. I do have some questions that may have been partially answered, so forgive me if I'm asking it again, but maybe I just need a bit more clarity. I have a question around this missing footpaths links register. So where does this link currently sit in the overall priority, given that it's already there and petitions have been thrown in? So that's part A, and part B is, do the petitions make any difference to its priority ranking?
Mr. Mackey.
Good question. In terms of the missing link register, and again, what I was describing before is that we'll be working our way through that prioritisation against criteria, and that's around efficiency and the like. Do petitions make any difference? It may draw it to our attention, but not particularly. It's more with regards to its validity in terms of the prioritisation activity.
Councillor Antoli.
Thank you. You've mentioned in the report that a detailed review of pavement, curb and channel and footpath will now be undertaken. Is that part of this new prioritisation methodology you foreshadowed, or is that standard?
Thank you. In this instance, it's part of our project initiation activity, so we will need to do a reseal there based on the condition of the road condition report that we received. So as part of that, we do a full and comprehensive scoping exercise to understand the full extent of works, not just on the road surface, but any, I guess, peripheral work that could be undertaken adjacent to the damaged road section.
Councillor Antoli.
So that's helpful. So does this engineering assessment provide, the information that this engineering assessment provides, is that provides new information that is currently not captured with the fact they're on the missing links register, or is this just a sort of a standard asset condition survey?
Mr. Mackey.
Yeah, so the condition survey I'm talking about is the IMG Roads data, which is a autonomous camera that gives us back our condition. As part of that activity, once we get that data, is we go out to the road and actually do a site validation. And we don't just look at the road surface, we look at adjacent infrastructure as well that might not have been picked up in that assessment.
And what communication feedback loop have we built to get back to the petitioners as to where this will be at through the process, so that we don't acknowledge with sweet words that we're considering it and that they don't hear from us for the next 5 years?
Thank you. I think that's a really good question. As part of the development of our new capital program processes that we're working on, we would actually take that away and put that into our process as well.
Anything further, Councillor Antoli?
The final one is around safety risk. So you mentioned that there's going to you will do an immediate dispatch of some people to look at the road. Is that what I heard correctly?
No, we won't do an immediate dispatch to look at the condition of the road, but to look at the condition of the footpath to make sure that is safe. Yeah.
Councillor Antoli.
Good clarification. So that will then hopefully prioritise the issue of safety risk and give you guys that quick analysis as to whether or not this should actually be prioritised on the to do with safety.
Mr. Mackey.
Yeah, that's correct, but it's also to ascertain whether or not we need to do any immediate rectification maintenance.
Any further contributions? No. Councillor Midgley, would you like to sum up? No, I'll put the motion then. It's printed up there on the screen. Moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Bain. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
And against, motion is carried unanimously. We're on page 266, considering the dog management policy. There's a recommendation on page 269. I'm looking for a mover in Councillor Dean and a seconder in Councillor Midgley. Councillor Dean.
What we hear before us is an amendment or a proposal for an amendment to our dog management policy. Hopefully not as controversial as previous iterations, but there is still an important consideration here, particularly in relation to the relocation of the dog obedience facility that is currently located on Gormley Drive, but due to the High Performance Centre will be needing a new home before us. If approved tonight, we'll initiate a process for the community to have their say over what appears to be two pretty good options. One will be tucked away in the Spring Farm development off Maddox Road, and the alternate option is down at Drew Point in Margate. Noting that the Drew Point location is the preferred option from the Obedience Club, who have been engaged. So this is only just a matter of putting this out to the public and seeking feedback as to which of those two options are preferred from the community. So I'm happy to endorse and just finish with just the one question in relation to the Drew Point site. Can I just seek clarification, the state of this site? I assume it's owned by Taz Water, from what I can see there. The broader community interest or potential use for that site is what I want to ask. If it weren't to be a dog exercise area and Maddox Road was to be the location, what other potential uses are we asked closing off from ourselves or the community if we were to go for the Drew Point site?
It's just me.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Just to clarify, there isn't... This isn't a choice. There's the Maddox Road site as an off-lead dog exercise area, and the Drew Point site is for the Obedience Club. So it's not one or the other. There are two separate proposed new declarations from Council in relation to its dog management policy. But just to answer the question in relation to the Drew Point site, it is currently owned by Taz Water. It's been on our radar now for at least 5 years. It's flagged in our sport and rec strategy that it's a strategic parcel of land that we should obtained tenure over. We have some approval for Tazwater to proceed with the advertising process, but the actual negotiations with respect to whether it's a purchase or a lease will be ongoing and will be the subject of a future report. So tonight's report is purely about the process under the dog management policy.
Councillor Dean.
Sure, thank you for the clarification on this reading of the report, Mrs. May.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. Thank you, Acting Mayor. So it's just that pause, isn't it? It's like, take a breath. It's great that we've come up with a proposal, a solution, and talking to our local dog user groups in regards to this. I'm just wondering, what sort of feedback have you had initially from the different dog user groups in Kingborough?
Mr. Smee. Certainly KDWA are really happy with the proposed Maddox Road solution. They attended our community forum on Thursday and voiced that publicly. Our engagement has primarily been with KDWA and the adjoining neighbours, as indicated in the report. The adjoining neighbours are supportive, and KDWA have had some liaison with their members and on the whole are very happy with this proposal. In relation to the Obedience Club, certainly the committee that we have been working with are supportive of this, acknowledging that perhaps not every single one of their members is delighted about moving from the precinct down to Margate, but on the whole there is good support for both of these proposals.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. In regards to any works, remediation or site works or contamination or anything like that, has Council had to do any work in that regards? And if so, has there been any costs and will there be any future costs and will that cost Council or is that part of this whole AFL precinct development budget?
Mr. Smee.
The development of both of the sites will be funded for as under the package. However, if there are the future ongoing operational management of these sites will be Council's responsibility. We have done testing in relation to the Drew Point site in relation to potential contamination, and that has cleared it for use for this purpose. So we don't envisage that that's going to come up as an issue in the future.
Councillor Midgley. Nothing further. Councillor Antoli and then Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. I have two questions. The first is, I don't know if I've spotted a potential error, and if it has come up in some other question or conversation, forgive me, I haven't heard. On page 260... Let me get this right. On page 268 at the top, the dog exercise area 3 does not seem to match what's in the report, which is page 5 of the report. There could be a superimposing error there because on page 5 of the report, the actual dog exercise 3 area is all over the buildings. So I'm not too sure if that's an error in the... I'm not sure if it is an error at all, but it looks like it's an error.
Page, Councillor Antoli?
Okay, on page 268, the area shaded as dog exercise area 3 in blue does not match what's in the public consultation report on page 5 of that report, which is page 276 of our agenda. Or have I got that wrong?
I think what you're looking at is, I mean, certainly what's on page 268 is the actual area, and then in the consultation report, you're looking at a square with an arrow that refers to the general direction.
Councillor Antoli.
But it would be a transposition error between the two.
Is it an error, are the two blue boxes on the two different pages correctly aligned? Because one is aligned over a building, and the other one is aligned in the space behind the building, which is grass area.
It is an error.
Okay, so I'll leave that to council officers to then fix up so that. putting out to the public what's correct. Yeah, thank you. The other question I had, the other question I had is this seems to be a general increase and improvement in the total surface area that we're adding to our dog-loving community, of which I'm a member. Is that correct? So this seems to be an upgrade or a plus.
Mr. Smee.
It would be a slight increase, but, I mean, certainly the premise of what we have been working with both these groups is that they'll get a like-for-like replacement. So in terms of area, it's certainly no less, and I haven't done the sums, but I suspect it is slightly more.
I think we just my general view is just the Drew Point piece, if you add that, seems substantial to me. But look, let's not argue on that. But it just I just bring it to the community. This is actually, yes, you lose where the dog training area is now in the sports precinct, but for the community, it just seems like an overall, from my point of view, a large increase in surface area available for dogs. So I just commend that to the council officers and say I think that's a great outcome.
Thank you, Councillor Antoli. Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I was going to say something similar, but congratulations to all the staff that have been working on this, because I guess one of the risks with the new High Performance Centre was the outcome for the existing users, and here we have two existing users and all the feedback so far has been positive, so I think it's a great result, so hats off to the staff. My second question was just going to be about timeframes. If the feedback all comes back positive and it looks like we're going to go ahead, have we got any timeframes on how much time it'll take to get these up to speed and how that relates to losing the existing facilities?
Mr. Smee.
The intent is certainly to have both these facilities in place before we have to remove the existing facilities within the precinct. So timeframes at this stage, we're working towards March of next year being the earliest that these would need to be in place. But obviously it's dependent on the tender processes and everything associated with them.
Councillor Bain. No, any further contributions? Councillor Dean, would you like to sum up? No, I put the motion as printed on the screen. It was moved by Councillor Dean, seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour, please say aye. And against, motion is carried unanimously. We're on page 283, the Coastal Hazards Policy. There's a recommendation on page 283. I'm looking for a mover in Councillor Cordova and a seconder in Councillor Midgley. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. This is a really important one. So obviously the coastline of Kingaroo is one of our greatest assets. It's one of the reasons why people love this area so much. It also is home to our amazing biodiversity, and there's important natural and cultural values across our coastline. So it, knowing that it's one of our great assets and knowing also that there's significant changes afoot, they're already taking place, whether you're at Snug Beach or whether you're at elsewhere throughout the municipality. There's lots of changes going on, and as we see more frequent and severe weather events that take place, this policy is central to that. And I have questions that I would like to ask, but before I do, I just want to draw everybody's attention to the guidelines here, that Council's going to take a pathway approach to planning that will look at all options and identify thresholds and triggers for when new decisions will need to be made. A critical thing, I think, for the community to understand is when it comes to our coastline and the development that takes place on our coastline, we have coastal hazards, and they range from erosion and storm surge and impacts of flooding or saltwater encroachment. We need to make decisions around what happens to the existing built environment. Do we replace? Do we stand our ground? Do we fortify those areas with hard structures, with engineered solutions like seawalls and weirs, or do we use soft solutions like nature-based methods, sand ladders, geotextile and sandbags? And in some cases where there are buildings already, do we retreat or do we hold the line? So that's some of the really important terminology that exists within this policy. And so I just wanted to invite, if I may, through you, Acting Mayor, council officers, to explain, really my question is, why is this so important? Why does it matter? And what are the significant changes that the community particularly should be aware of?
Mr. Pearce.
As we see the increasing impacts of climate change in the coastal area, it's important that we do have that consistent approach to which options are available to us. So ensuring we prioritise the area that do have those high values for the options, as they do have impacts on other natural spaces. For example, an engineered solution in a seawall will damage potentially access to beach or cause sand scouring. So it's ensuring that we balance our approaches through that.
Thank you. And through you, Acting Mayor, when it comes to managing the buildings themselves, is it fair to say, really, the question is how are we supposed to manage our stakeholder relationships when it comes to, whether it's various sports clubs or whether it's people who have, some kind of boat infrastructure, residents on Bruny Island, how are we supposed to effectively communicate this policy around, particularly around the areas where we are going to choose not to hold the line?
Mr. Pearce.
So through a number of case study sites we have that are experiencing increasing coastal hazards, so we have three townships that have been identified and communicated that they are experiencing greater impacts over time. It's communicating where loss acceptance may be appropriate, but where holding the line is more so. So the key piece for this policy is that it relates to council-owned and managed land, so it wouldn't relate to loss of any private residences, but it does assist us in making those decisions about what is the cost that we are facing. Are we continuing to rebuild in areas that we know are going to be at risk for future coastal hazards, or do we start to make strategic decisions about shifting to more protectable areas?
Cordova.
Thank you. Thanks for that answer, and through you, Acting Mayor. A critical area, I think, is for people to understand with us as we assess these issues as a council, the community. This is an invitation for the community to come on board with us as we. I want to reframe this debate to being about prudent fiscal management, because ultimately, if you keep throwing good money after bad, let's say that you're facing a rapidly changing coastline. So in the example of Snug, one part of the beach is moving outward and another part of the beach is moving inward, and that's just due to how the sand is moving. That will affect infrastructure that's along our coastline. And when it comes to making decisions as to whether we build in certain areas or whether we replace existing assets further back, those are decisions that we'll have to make in conversation with our community. But I think rather than thinking about this as a kind of, a pro-climate change or an anti-climate change action discussion, this really is a discussion about community safety and wellbeing and about infrastructure investment. It doesn't make sense to throw money at assets that are going to be stranded. It makes sense to invest prudently in areas where we know that we can have those assets sustainably. So I just wanted to, I guess, cast a fiscal responsibility lens over this discussion, because it is critically important, and it's one of those really interesting areas where the rubber kind of hits the road in terms of the actual impacts that climate change is having on councils all around Australia. But here in Kingborough, we've got so much coastline that it affects us more, where if we're going to be good fiscal managers, we need to make sure that we are willing to make decisions around managed retreat, around avoidance of construction along areas of coastline that have already been designated as at high risk of coastal hazards, and where appropriate, infrastructure modification. And there will be some cases, like whether it's at Kingston Beach, we're seeing some soft solutions implemented. There will be occasions where we will have to have those discussions about how much money do we put towards hard infrastructure solutions like seawalls, as opposed to soft infrastructure solutions like sandbags or just letting the coastline change in a kind of more natural way. So it's a really interesting area. It's a really important area for fiscal management, and I commend the motion. I thank the staff once again for all their work on it.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Fox and then Councillor Antoli.
Yes, I've done the coastal management course twice, and I've been the local government representative on the coastal policy. And I realised that with coasts where one person solidifies the position, someone else loses, basically. Or if you, for example, if a council were to build a dike somewhere, then it might create a gulch next door. And I'm concerned that, I realise that what we're doing here is perfect, but what we're not doing on paper here is to advise local people who have assets like boat sheds, like the ones behind you on the picture in Conyngham. They're probably not a good example because that's a hard surface, but in, for example, Bruny Island, where there are sandy areas, people consolidate their assets, but what happens is that the neighbour's shed will wash away because of the mobile landform, basically, that will erode where something else is being fortified. Are we in a position to advise and to assist people in the community with their private assets? This policy only deals with assets owned by council, but there are repercussions in whatever anybody does. And I'm just wondering, my question is council able to advise and assist and support or discourage the behaviour that has been happening on our coast?
Ms. Green. Thank you. Really important question, and you're right, this coastal hazard policy does primarily look at council land and council assets and our own approach, but communicating these issues to the community is really important and very difficult at the same time, because loss acceptance is hard and change is hard, as we know. We've recently been successful in the last few weeks with a really sizable grant from the Disaster Recovery Fund, and that's going to be a statewide grant that LGAT will administer and will be on the working group. And there's three components to it. It's going to improve coastal hazards mapping across the state, and that'll really help us in Kingborough, where we've got some areas that aren't well mapped. And the second part of that is to work with the state government to produce guidelines for councils on how to talk to communities about coastal change, because we've started doing that, and so in our three coastal communities that are most at risk, Adventure Bay, Kingston Beach and Snug, as you would know, we've been talking to those communities. But it's really hard when local government comes along and says, this is our part, but what's the state's part and what's your part? And so I'm really looking forward to developing these guidelines with the state and being able to have those critical conversations together and being able to be clear with the community about what are the bits that we will assist with, where are state government's roles and where is that their own risk and liability. So that'll happen over the next 3 years. We'll develop the guidelines and then start implementing. But I'm not saying we're not going to start talking to the community before that. Obviously, at the moment, our focus is on Snug and talking to the Snug community about coastal hazards.
Councillor Fox.
Thank you for that explanation. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Further contributions, Councillor Antoli.
Yes, thank you, and I appreciate the previous question because it answered my question on what three communities are affected. So that's Adventure Bay, Kingston Beach and Snug, is that right? Interesting. I'll need to dig deeper about why that is. The other question I have is, so as I understand it, the state owns from the shoreline into the sea and we manage from there inland. Is that right? Is that how the division of jurisdiction works?
Ms. Quinn.
Yeah, thank you. It varies across the state, along the coastline. So, yeah. So council mostly leases beaches from the Crown. So the Crown generally owns the land you're talking about in that, you know, the foreshore, the sand and the water. And council has leases or licences, whichever one, on some of those most popular beaches. So we certainly don't have... So the ones we tend to manage are those ones where the population centres are. Yeah, so it's Kingston Beach and Taruna and Blackmans Bay Beach and, you know, parts of Snug. But our exposure is not the full coastline and it varies. So you could, that tenure can be seen on the list where it comes in and out. Sometimes it's Crown, sometimes it's council. Sometimes it's private, right down to the watermark.
Councillor Antoli.
That was very, actually, that was interesting. I didn't know that. So is it, what, I can't use the word insurance, but what funds are available to us to support us in a coastal emergency, part A? And part B is, could we be unable to access those funds if our coastal hazard policy is not well thought through or not a robust? Is that so? That A and B.
Ms. Quinn.
Thank you. Tricky question, to be honest, because I'm not completely sure. So in an emergency situation, again, that's what you're talking about, so if there's a big storm surge or something and it rips out some of the foreshore, so generally there aren't funds for those sort of things. What there would be funds for is assets. So where we have assets like maybe public walkways, or you might have a surf life-saving club or something, or a toilet block. Maybe toilet block's a good example. So often our assets that are in that really high-risk zone are low-cost assets. So but there are some situations where we do have clubhouses, and but a lot of those are licensed to other people. So, the Australian government and the state government have emergency response funds like they do in floods, and they would provide council, you know, we could apply for those funds. But I can't think of an example where that has happened in recent times where we have applied for funds. We certainly do with floods, but coast is probably less sure. And that is the problem, I think, more generally in this coastal space, that there isn't clear policy positions between state, local and federal responsibilities for coastal management in Australia. It is a really difficult space.
So that again, that's helpful. I'm learning, but I love it. So it's fair to say the policy's focus is around people, infrastructure that either we own or that supports our community. Is that fair to say?
I'd say that's fairly accurate. So it relates to assets that are built on council-owned or managed land. So there may be occasions where a boat shed is built on land that we manage, and so we have options to provide advice with how that is managed, whether it's going to increase the likelihood of coastal hazards. But primarily it's for those areas where we're looking at our assets in those spaces.
Councillor Antoli.
So if we had a unfortunate weather event, that's good, thank you, sorry. If we had an unfortunate weather event where there is a peninsula of our LGA where no one really lives and that has been damaged or destroyed by an event, we're not going to go in there and try and rectify it and put it back to its original state, are we?
So that would be outside the intention of this policy. So the intention of this is preventative. So it is preparing for the resilience of those assets in the coastal areas as opposed to responding to damage from events.
Councillor Antoli.
No, that's fantastic, and I'm more than happy to support the policy. And I do appreciate answering those questions, because I'm pretty plugged in and I learnt a lot. And, if we have a relatively low information individual out there that's really not plugged into this sort of stuff and not connected into council meetings, and this is the sort of thing that I like to put on my socials as well, because it does educate our community.
Thank you, Councillor Antoli. Councillor Midgley.
Mayor, thank you to my council colleagues for the great questions. I've just got one question around, and the staff have highlighted this already, but since the development of the policy, what are some of the key highlights, I guess, since it's been implemented?
So this has been a year of embedding with this policy. So the Coastal Hazards Working Group was established to create these processes previously, and as of mid-year this year has begun assessing projects for their delivery. We've assessed approximately 20 projects, apologies off the top of my head, and they have come out at predominantly medium risk, some low risk, but they include the Tyndall Road repair to Tyndall Beach, where landslip has impacted it, and various community hall or bathroom repairs or beach shelters that we're having conversations about. Where is the current inundation zone and is it currently impacted? And if the asset has a longer than 30-year lifespan, is it going to be impacted if we maintain it for another 30 years?
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you.
Any further contributions? No. Councillor Cordova, would you like to sum up? No, I'll put the motion then as printed up there on the screen. It was moved, Councillor Cordova, seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour, please say aye. And against, motion is carried unanimously. We're now on page 296. There is a recommendation on page 297. We're considering the corporate credit card policy review. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Move, Councillor Bain, seconded Councillor Cordova, Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. So the purpose of this report is to consider the updated policy on the corporate credit cards. It looks like the main changes from the previous policy is we're allocating to positions within operations that have demonstrated an approved requirement for use. Instead of, I think the previous approach was more so allocating to senior positions on the assumption that they require purchasing a card. So I think that's a great update, makes sense. The credit card allocation table is being reviewed annually instead of every 2 years. There's lots of details on the policy around credit card limits, what transactions are permitted, along with links to the relevant guidelines, such as the travel expense guidelines and the entertainment expense guidelines. So all in all, happy to endorse the updated policy.
Councillor Fox.
Before I came to this meeting, there was an email that came out that was modifying this policy slightly. And I just want to be sure. I mean, we've got the written version in front of us, but I would like the staff to explain briefly what those modifications are that are not marked up on our papers.
Thank you. I understand they were just typos, but Mr. Spinks, would you like to clarify?
Yep, thank you. That's correct. So a little gremlin crept into the material that was just distributed, so we just had some slight typos and grammatical errors just to fix up, but no change to the policy whatsoever in terms of what's in front of you.
Thank you. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. Thank you, Acting Mayor. Quick question around the communications lead. So obviously I assume the specific amounts of money have been chosen deliberately, so I don't mean to undermine that professional decision, but when we're running communications, do we use social media advertising as a strong component of our advertising? As a strong component of our engagement, and is $1,000 on the credit card enough to maintain really good, let's give a real example. Let's say we want to advertise on social media to make sure everybody knows about the dog engagement policy, and we really want to cross all our T's and dot all our I's, so that there has been some criticism, I think it's fair to say, levelled at council around whether we're engaging enough or whether enough people hear about, even when we publish things on the website and we publish them in the newspaper and we publish them here and there and everywhere, surely if we were running like really concerted paid social media advertising campaigns, we'd be able to reach more people. And so my question is, are the amounts of money that are allocated to this credit card policy appropriate in order to undertake that specific operational function? Obviously, I recognise that the communications team will have a budget that they adhere to, but what I'm saying is when we do social media advertising, typically one needs a credit card in order to undertake that activity. So are the delegations sufficient?
Mr. Stewart.
Thanks for the question. Sorry, I've just had a chat with our communications lead to be able to answer to your question more thoroughly. The credit card is used for undertaking things like social media paid promotion of posts and things like that. However, she's just told me that $1,000 is plenty for the activity. And I'll also note that we do have the ability under the policy to top up credit cards if there needs to be more use, and there's a process through the policy to be able to do that. So I think it's an entirely appropriate level.
Further contributions? Councillor Bain, did you want to sum up? No, I'll put the motion as printed up there on the screen. All those in favour?
Aye.
And against? Motion is carried unanimously. We're on page 332. We're considering the Kingborough Bicycle Advisory Committee minutes for the 7th of November 2025. There is a recommendation on 333. Looking for a mover, Councillor Midgley, and a seconder, Councillor Fox. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. As per policy or discussion we've had previously, that any letters that we write comes through as a motion. So in regards to this one, as it states there, at the KBAC committee move that Council write to the Minister for Transport regarding the status of the state's walk, wheel, ride strategy and ongoing active transport funding, noting the benefits previous state funding has provided to implement the Greater Hobart Cycling Plan. Included in that plan is many projects that have occurred across Kingborough. So it is really important that we note and we ask that this transport funding is continued. And the other part of this is that we have had a committee member leave and a new representative, and I'd like to thank Mr. David McQuillan as well for his time and effort and going on site and meeting with staff and providing some really valuable input as well. The second part of this is for Karen Camino, who attends actually the committee at the moment as a representative of the community, just, you know, for interest. She rides her granddaughter around the community, really active user of our local paths and trails. And it's part of, moving that we nominate Karen to the committee. So they're the two parts of this report and motion before us tonight.
Thank you for the explanation, Councillor Midgley. Further contributions, Councillor Dean.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Just a question from me. There's an item on the agenda relating to on 338 of our agenda, which relates to the Taroona Highway bike lane upgrades. I feel like that's been on the card since 2022, ever since I've been here. Can maybe the chair or staff give us an update as to where on earth that one's at? Because I feel like it's been deferred a few times.
Mr. Mackey.
Yeah, thank you. The bike lane project had to go for what's the name term for it? Get the term for it. It's not helpful. still not helpful. Yes. No, it isn't. Thank you. Had to get Crown consent. There we go. Thank you. And we're working our way through that process now. We've got some feedback back and we've had to do some slight modifications to the design around the stormwater joints. Once we get that back, it'll go in for DA with our aim to get that substantially complete this year or complete this year.
Councillor Dean.
Great. And just so to clarify, there has been some on-road infrastructure put at some of the intersections, some green marking at various points. Is that a state growth initiative or has that been our expenditure?
Mr. Mackey.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that. I'd have to take that on notice unless another officer has any information on it.
Councillor Dean.
I'll follow up with Councillor Midgley. I'm sure she'll know the answer at some point. It's not urgent. Thank you.
Further contributions, Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I didn't want to pass up the opportunity to echo the thanks that Councillor Midgley gave to the outgoing member of the Bicycle Advisory Committee, David McQuillan, and also to wholeheartedly endorse Karen Camino as the new member as a replacement. I just think it's such a testament to the our community and the people are willing to spend their time to help out to build a better and stronger community. It's really uplifting, and particularly I just wanted to mention that Karen is the most amazing volunteer. I see Karen volunteering at Parkrun all the time and among other things, and I just think it's so wonderful that people are donating their time to build the community, to strengthen the community and to give back. It's just it's really uplifting and it's really motivating. And it's one of those really good news stories that council can provide that platform to to allow people who have really good ideas and who are really inspired and interesting and have great things to contribute, to give them that platform to be able to contribute those ideas. And these will make like the work of the Bicycle Committee already has made an indelible impact on our tracks and trails and the way that we have active transport options throughout the municipality. It's actually building this community infrastructure that's helping keep us all healthier and improving our wellbeing. So as ever, you know, we thank them wholeheartedly, and they're doing great work, and keep it up. And I'm very pleased to see Karen joining the committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. And Councillor Cordova did take some of the wind out of my sails. I want to thank David McQuillan, who's a personal friend of mine, for his lengthy service to the committee and actually to our community. He's a lovely chap, and I wish Karen all the very best and thank her for stepping up, because as Councillor Cordova said, without volunteers, these committees fall apart, and we need the input so that we're providing solutions for the community that they want.
Thank you, Councillor Antoli. Further contributions? No. Councillor Midgley, would you like to know, summing up? I'll put the motion then. Recommendation on page 333. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
And against? Motion is carried unanimously. We're now on page 342. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please, to note the appendices. Move Councillor Midgley. Seconded Councillor Bain. Are there any questions? There's some really great reports in the appendices. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. Yes, there is some great reports. The first one is in regards to the CEO meeting, the one with Homes Tasmania, regarding Huntingfield. If there could be any update on that, please.
Mr. Stewart.
So we obviously had a conversation with Homes Tas, sort of getting an update on where they were up to. We talked about a number of things like the road connection, the process to get that opened, and street lighting for that area. Also talked about what the process was around the land release. So really it was just an update conversation to making sure that we were staying plugged into the conversation and that we were supporting them wherever possible to move through the process to get the Huntingfield development underway.
Councillor Cordova and then Councillor Antoli. Oh, sorry, Councillor Midgley.
No worries. Thank you. So just, the Environmental Services report. I just note that staff have put a lot of time and effort into putting this one together, and there has been some really great outcomes. In regards to, sorry, I'm just finding my questions. So I'm just wondering if staff wanted to highlight, I guess, some of the biodiversity, the Biodiversity Highlight Award, and the Natural Areas publication. I'm just wondering at all if staff would like to talk more about that Biodiversity Award or the Natural Areas publication, how that sort of came about.
Ms. Quinn.
Thank you, Councillor, for the question. Yes, so on page 4 you can see one of our staff members, Bridget Joop, and the Deputy Mayor, receiving an award with some of our local GPs and practitioners. So this is for our Dose of Nature program, which we were... we didn't win the award, unfortunately, we were runner-up, and apparently there were some incredible projects that were talked about on that night, who were also in that runners-up group, where, and so for us, Dose of Nature, as you probably know, has been running for quite a few years, and it's the only program that we know of that's being run in local government that's trying to blend a mix of well-being and connecting people to their local areas and the importance of nature in that, because we've got so many beautiful local patches that people can go to. So it's trying to introduce people who may not have been there before into that environment in a really safe way, and also while you're there, whether it's mindfulness or reflection. So those GPs, if you like, are prescribing nature to some of their patients and suggesting that they can come along to council's program and participate as part of their mental health. So it's a fantastic program. It was great for it to be recognised. Yeah, we're really proud of it. And the other one was the Natural Areas publication. So this is on appeared on our website. So it's really, it came from an idea of, again, trying to connect locals to their local patch. And so it's a guided, it's a bit like a guided walk, but really it's like a photo montage that you can use on your phone or you can download and print out, and it tells you about what are the local plants and animals in that patch and some of the features. So as you walk through that place, you could do it with a school group or any other group, or you can just do it on your own. Take that guide along and learn a bit about the plants that you're seeing in flower or whatever it might be. So, yeah, we're just really trying to get people comfortable with visiting their local places and learning more about them.
Anything further, Councillor Midgley?
Just a thank you. And the feedback that I received on at an event on Friday was from a community member who was really grateful for the dose in nature. She could take her partner who had dementia. It was a really safe and welcoming environment. So, yeah, congratulations to staff on the award. If you could pass that on, please.
Thank you. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. The Natural Areas and Biodiversity team, but also the entire Environmental Services report, is it makes for a really brilliant reading. Over 12,000 native trees planted. Hundreds upon hundreds of school children engaged in community participation, National Tree Day, all kinds of amazing things, and making a real impact. So once again, thank you. But I do have a specific question around the private water suppliers. So this is on page 360. Just a point of clarification, I guess. It says that only two of the five private water suppliers are tested by council, but the other three are tested by Department of Health. And I guess that has something to do with Department of Education, Children and Young People facilities, and a healthcare facility. So there's two schools and then a healthcare facility. I'm just wanting to ask why some of the water suppliers are tested by us and why the others are tested by Department of Health. And isn't it the case that if of the five suppliers they're getting two different types of assessment, are we not comparing like for like? Isn't there a chance of different results depending on who you get to do the testing rather than have the same agency do all the testing?
Thank you. Yes, good question. I can understand where you're going. The testing is different depending on the use, so it's about the use. So council regulates private water supplies, for example, for tourism uses. Most of these are on Bruny Island, whether they're small cafes that are like based at Dens Point Hall is an example, where they're using a council facility but got a small cafe. So where that use is higher risk, that, and as you've identified, so that's either the school or the healthcare facility on Bruny Island, they're both regulated by the government, but they're testing for the same things. Yeah, yeah. And the samples are taken in a really consistent way. Yeah, there's a protocol for how you take those samples and how they get to the lab and how those reports are shared and things. So, yeah. Yeah.
Anything further, Councillor Cordova?
Yes, please. Through you, Acting Mayor, one other question, this time about food safety. It says on the next page there, 361, that at current staffing levels there's not the capacity for the required level of food business inspections, although I do know that lots of inspections did take place. It goes on to say, and I quote, to support this function, a casual environmental health officer was engaged between 1 July and 30 September to prioritise inspections of high-risk premises. My question is really, was that just a once-off, or is this a long-term systemic problem that we have? Do we need to up the resources in that area, or do we predict that? Yeah, was that just as a result of an anomaly that it was a particularly busy time for some reason, or is this something that we actually need to invest more in?
Ms. Quinn.
Thank you. It's not an anomaly in that the number of food businesses are continuing to increase in Kingborough, which is a fantastic thing. So it means people are investing in Kingborough. And the reason we use it, but it is partly an anomaly because there were some changes in the environmental health team. So it's a really small team. They do an incredible job at prioritising their work. They have a lot of statutory responsibilities, as you can see by their report. And so what they are doing is prioritising the P1 or the highest risk food businesses, and the state that is what the state government asks us to do as a council. So it's not an anomaly, and yes, there is also always a reason for more resources in a department, but it's not a high risk in terms of it's not exposing council, you know, to a statutory risk. It's something we are managing well through having this, the ability to have this casual officer come and assist us. Yeah.
Anything further?
Yes, please, through you, Acting Mayor. Questions now relate to the CEO's activities, if I may. A whole bunch of questions, actually. I'll try and be really quick. Is Huntingfield on track? There was a meeting on the 3rd of October with Homes Tasmania. Are there any updates that the public should be privy to?
Councillor Midgley did just ask that, but do you have anything further to add?
I guess it's not for me to comment for Homes Tasmania whether they're on track or off track in terms of their overall project delivery. That's a matter for them as an entity to talk about how they're going with the delivery of Huntingfield. I guess the key points of this are where our role intersects with them. So, you know, for example, we've done the components that we require to open the street that goes through the subdivision, and then it's now for them to choose when they want to open that area. Additionally, we've issued the DAs for the subdivision for the phase one. So yeah, so it was really talking to them about those points of contact and also just a check in for how they're going. So from my perspective, we've done what we need to for the next steps, and we'll continue to work with them over the overall development of the site, because it is going to be a large development that will occur over many years.
Over.
Through you, Acting Mayor, the question is now about a meeting with Mr. Mervyn Reid in company with the Mayor on the 17th of November. Is there any what was the purpose of those meetings?
Yeah, thank you. Mr. Reid had a number of different points that he wanted to raise and opinions on how council is performing and the things that we need to be focusing on as an organisation. And he also had a specific issue that he wanted to bring up in relation to a roundabout.
Councillor Cordova.
Final question is just about the meeting with Adventure Patch, representatives from Adventure Patch. The questions around the provision of childcare in the municipality, is it sufficient, and is the was the meeting in relation to, well, what was the meeting in relation to?
So it was a check-in. So they requested the meeting with me to talk about
check-in, not a chicken.
Oh.
A check-in, everybody.
Thank you for the interpretation.
Sorry, Dave.
We do love our Kiwi CEO.
I'm working on my vowels. So it was about the plans that Adventure Patch have for expansion, a new site that they've identified for that, and just a general conversation about how things are going. They are a provider, though, that has plans and aspirations for, I guess, increased service to our communities. That's really positive. So talking to them about that and understanding what that is, and so wherever possible, we can be a part of that process with them.
Councillor Foley and then Councillor Bain.
I'm not going to ask my question. I'm fine. Thank you.
Okay, Councillor Bain.
Thank you. Yeah, just a very quick one. In regards to the Homes Tasmania and Huntingfield Road, is that solely a state government decision on when that opens, or do we have some say? And also, did they indicate any timeframes?
Stuart.
So we've the components that were required have now been done for the opening of that road. So things like the installation of street signage and those types of things is all complete now. So really that is now in their hands about when they choose to hand that over to council in terms of opening the road. So I imagine that'll be relatively imminent.
Councillor Bain, any further questions? I'll put the motion, which is up there that the appendices attached to the agenda be received and noted. It was moved, Councillor Midgley, seconded Councillor Bain. All those in favour? And against? Motion is carried unanimously. Everyone's getting tired. Page 342, there were no notices of motion. Item 17, confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session. That in accordance with Regulation 17 of the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulations 2025, Council, by absolute majority, move into closed session to consider the following items: confirmation of minutes, application of leave of absence, tender for replacement of two heavy tip trucks, provision of traffic management services. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Move, Councillor Fox, seconded Councillor Bain. All those in favour? And against? Motion is carried unanimously. So in accordance with the Council Meetings and Councillor Workshops Audio Recording Guidelines Policy, recording of the open session of the meeting will now cease. So thank you very much to everybody who's been watching along at home. Open session.